Does it involve squid ink?
Are you getting sick of that question?
It doesn't involve squid ink.
Damn.
I think squid ink's jumped the whale now.
It's jumped the whale's testicle. Yeah.
If you're volunteering to wank off all those squid, you can have it, Adrian.
Sessionable. All right, welcome to Sessionable, everybody. This was originally meant to be our year in review episode, but Tom kind of ran away with the files. So that will be our next episode, but in the meantime, we have a special guest with us today. So it's me, Adrian, Liam.
I'm the special guest.
No, it's regular host of me, Liam, Brad, and special guest Doc. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Doc. Pleasure to be back. Thank you.
So
is Doc our first two-timer?
I think so. Maybe.
Whoa.
I'm a two-timer. Brad doesn't count anymore.
Brad doesn't count anymore. He's a regular host
now. Part of
the
furniture.
There's a couple of jokes in that. Keep moving on.
So later in the episode, we're going to do a blind tasting of a couple of your beers. But I guess we'll start off with some recent beer news that have been happening in the past month or so since we last recorded.
What's everyone talking about?
Well, the most recent one, I think, is the new Stone beers that have just come into the country.
I think there's only one that's come in.
The Enjoy Buy has come in.
Stone is now official.
Is now officially imported into Australia. And I had a taste of it. I thought it was really good. What do you guys think?
I haven't cracked one
yet. You haven't opened it?
Yeah. I had a taste of one, but it had been sat on a table for about an hour before I tried it.
So it was warm?
It was warmish.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was getting a few notes in there that maybe I probably shouldn't have done, so I'm going to reserve judgment.
Fair enough.
I had one as well, and I toyed with the idea of cellaring it until the 13th of February, being that it was best before the 14th. So by the 13th, it might have been good. But no one could tell me whether I should cellar it cold or warm. They were just saying, just fucking drink it. So,
well, knowing Stone, they want you to cold keep it for the whole time. So I don't know
if it was shipped refrigerated or not.
It was shipped refrigerated.
As far as I know, air freighted from the US, which is why...
kind of had no choice when it's up there, right?
Yeah, which is why it costs so much. Because it's a 30-day code, so considering ships take about 2 months to get here, they couldn't do it by ship.
So I think the point was that it was released in Australia the same day that it was released in the US.
Yeah, it was. Which is pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that BrewDog or the BrewDog bars in the UK were advertising, I think, that this week coming, they're going to be getting all the Enjoy Buys IPAs and doing tastings in their bars. So
I guess they had it shipped over rather than air freighted because it's just across the pond for them.
It's interesting to see that Australia got it 7 days before it got to the UK.
Well, I think it's part of an exclusive in that if you are getting it now, you're also committing to a delivery that's on the water for a wider range of the portfolio. So
yeah, quite a fair bit, actually.
It's a tease. Yeah. Is it a gimmick? Maybe. Was the beer worthy? Absolutely.
I thought it was pretty damn
fantastic. Is it something you'd do when the next one comes out? No, because at the price point of what it is, it's pretty offensive. For what it is a unique one. You do it once only. You did it. You enjoyed it. Is what it is. Move on. If you were to want to do it every time, then what are you getting out of it?
It's not viable, But I think it's, especially with the whole reasoning why we haven't had legit Stone here before, it's a pretty good way to put yourself on the scene and go, this is what we can do and this is the best it can be tasting. So,
well, you say it's not viable to do it all the time. Do you not think that they'd be able to generate the same hype if they were to continue to air freight and charge?
I think it's a big ask to repeatedly ask people to drop $40-$45 on a bottle
on a regular basis. Well,
it's a special occasion thing. And
have you guys seen that sort of hype before for an imported beer over here?
Yep. Tactica Nuclear Penguin. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Some of the three McKellar, BrewDog, Floyd stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
other bits and pieces like that.
Okay.
But it's a once-only type thing. Right. So even I wasn't even going to buy into it. I wasn't even going to do it. But because Melbourne got it essentially a day before anyone else because it landed in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And if Melbourne. You are on social media and you're a beer nerd and you're looking at your Instagram feed and your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed...
You get thirsty
pretty
quick. It's
just flooded with it. And it's like, peer pressure, whatever. It's supposed to be pretty good. I'll bugger it. I'll grab one. I'll make a couple of phone calls and make sure I've got one sorted. And then enjoy it. It's like, yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm privileged that I could pay that amount of money and enjoy it by myself and whatever and then move on. Would I do it again? Probably not.
Would you have it on tap? If it was here on tap?
I think it's
It was available
it's
on tap.
Yeah,
there were cases in the same
Bit of Fears are getting some, I believe.
But they're pretty expensive. Yeah,
there should be some in Sydney before long, apparently. So
the Royal Albert's, I believe... Yeah. He's getting a keg.
And Bit of Few, apparently,
yeah.
So, but
yeah, it's not going to be a cheap beer.
No.
It's going to be, I think, more expensive on tap than in the bottle.
I would be happier to have the beer again if I was in the US, but if I'm in Australia, having to pay $40+ for it, I'm not sure if I would do it again, considering...
But if you have it on tap, it could be in a smaller portion. So
yeah, I mean, like, on tap I'll try it, but, like, buying a whole bottle for that much, again, I'm not sure if I would. Considering there's a lot of great local stuff that you can get as fresh.
So, Adrian, tasting
pretty damn good.
I did. My wife was off with my son doing something. My daughter was locked in a room doing a video on something else. And I sat by the pool and took a couple of videos and a couple of photos and just sat back and enjoyed
Love
it.
Life,
I'd done the lawns, I'd done the yard work, I'd been for a swim, and it was like, if I'm going to have one beer to start the afternoon at 9.4% or whatever it is, that's supposed to be amazing or whatever, then I've got to start with that because otherwise it's just going to sit there for 3 months before I drink it and find the reason to do it. So just do it.
I did have one customer at work said that it could do with about a month to mellow out, but I don't know if they'll just been as smart.
I've heard that as well. I've heard people saying that too, but yeah, you never know. It's very fresh. Maybe it's just a case that people aren't used to drinking.
Well, I think definitely in Australia, people aren't used to drinking those US styles of IPAs that fresh.
Mm.
One thing I was quite surprised by, I haven't had it yet, but just looking at the bottle of it at work, is the clarity of it.
Yeah.
It's quite a light colored beer.
I believe they filter it. It is quite... like getting towards amber when you pour it into the glass.
Right,
But yeah, it is like super clear because they do filter it. But yeah, I shared it three ways because I was at work. But I thought it was really good. And incidentally, another piece of local news is that we got the Happy Place IPA. And that was like, that probably held up pretty well too. To the enjoy by considering it was a different style, like it's a lot lighter.
Yep.
At about 6.something%, it fucking tasted good.
That was a great beer, you know. And again, you know, indication that having it, you know, soon and having it fresh is a win. It almost glowed in the glass. It was a kind of almost atomic orange kind of color in the glass, and it was a beautiful beer. It really was.
Shame it wasn't air freighted from Adelaide though.
If only we could have had it fresher, right? But yeah, no, kudos to the Wheaty for what they're doing down there. Obviously, you know firsthand, Doc, what their operation's like down there. And
love the guys down there. Some of my best customers are in Adelaide. And having brewed on that brew house as well, loved it. I dragged the whole family along to try the beer so I could get a taste it on launch afternoon last Sunday. Yeah, it was really good. I pinged them a half a mark for not having probably a bit more clarity in it, but because they don't filter their beers or anything else, then it is what it is. And I gave him a half a mark back because he's a good mate. And also he was the reason how I got into the Wheaty about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've been a regular producer of beer for them ever since. So.
Yeah, so Aaron was saying... It was pouring a bit cloudier than when it was at the Wheaty, so whether or not it was like start of the run or end of the run, the keg that we got, who knows.
Or it just got mixed up on freight up and hadn't had a chance to settle.
Yeah.
So, perhaps.
Yeah. Should probably talk about what beer you're drinking.
Yeah, what are we drinking?
So we are drinking the Beavertown Holy Cowbell India Stout.
Lovingly brought back from London.
From the UK. Thanks, Brad.
Still with the price sticker on the can.
£3.
That hurts a little bit, doesn't it?
That's what? That's $4.50? It's like, that's pretty...
More like $5.80 today's currency.
Yeah.
That's not too bad then. What are they going for here? About $10? $9?
Considering
the
this
Beavertown cans? Yeah.
Well, this was purchased from Borough Market up in central London, so that's not too bad going at all, really. I'm quite happy with that. But yeah.
I fucking love the artwork.
I love the art.
They're incredible.
Yeah. The cans, I think they started coming in bottles about a year ago to Australia, and now they're in cans. And
I don't remember the bottle artwork being anywhere near as poppy as...
No, it was nowhere near as cool as the can artwork.
So it's quite a dry stout. Well, with quite a bitter finish in there as well.
Has anybody had an India stout before? This is a first for me.
I guess like it's kind of like a black IPA, right? Like, you know,
well,
in the same vein as Pothole Black, in that it's not really a black IPA, but it's more towards that stout porter thing, but it's still quite hoppy, dry, bitter.
It is very hoppy, yeah. It is really dry, and I think it does have a really nice, like, almost charcoal-y finish to it, which I really like.
Without getting to that astringent...
Without being burnt coffee or anything like that. Yeah, it toes that line quite well. And in the glasses, really nice colour as well.
For me, it seems to be heavier at the dark end of it. So you do get more of the stout characteristics than you get in many black IPAs. So I think it does play on that a bit more. First, I've never had this beer before. I didn't have it while I was over there, and I've this is the first time for me, and I really like it.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
We've now had an India Saison, now had an India Stout. What's the next thing to get Indianized?
We've had India Porters as well, haven't we, before?
India Stout, India Saison, India Dark Ale, India Lambic.
India Lambic.
We've had India Red Ales as well.
Yeah, India.
Come on, guys, I'm looking for ideas here.
Get your notepad out.
India Berliner Weiss with Squiddick.
With Squiddick.
There's a few jokes going around like that on Twitter the other day. More to do with, I think, whales and...
Oh, the whale testicle beer. Yeah. Oh, that was fun.
There's not been an Indian whale testicle ale yet.
There is a whale testicle ale. But
I think it was, we ended up with a whale testicle ale with a side of squid ink and a hint of balsamic vinegar. And that's the next thing.
International collaboration.
Depth charge, the shot of balsamic vinegar into the plant. And then,
was it an Icelandic brewery that did the whale testicle beer?
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. But hey... You know, so is a squidding beer. So let's not judge.
One thing I will say about this beer is that it was a lot easier to bring back in the can than an equivalent bottle.
It certainly
works for the Mueller.
I love mulling cans over because they weigh significantly less.
Yeah.
And you can just bring way more.
I got to say, I think I actually am a massive sucker for the labelling because... I mean, I've always enjoyed the Beavertown cans, but then now they've been in the cans with the artwork, I do find myself grabbing them a lot more, and we're actually selling a lot more of them as well. So, it definitely works.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. I would encourage any brewer out there to give canning a go.
Any brewer, Doc.
nudge.
Been trying, but it's got to be done right. If you're going to do something, do it right.
Absolutely.
I think we brought this up the last time Doc was here. So. All right.
More news.
Before we go on a break and get onto the blind tastings, I think the other major news that has happened in the last, or been announced in the last month, was Dave Padden leaving Riverside Brewing, which was a complete shock. Because I guess, like, you know, he was his... one of the founders and the face of Riverside. So, I mean, what were your reactions to that?
For me, the news broke while I was out of the country. I went back to the UK over Christmas and New Year, and I wasn't actually keeping an active eye on the scene while I was away. Very busy seeing people. So I didn't actually find out until I came back, and I was in absolute shock when I came back. I really was not expecting news like that to hit. And for me, I guess I have a kind of distorted view from the rest of you guys, but I mean, I arrived in Australia 2.5 years ago, and I think Riverside hadn't been on the scene for too long by that point. So I kind of intrinsically associate Riverside with the Sydney Bruins scene.
Because you were both in that same timing.
Yeah. You know, they've produced great beers from the very start, and, you know, I kind of arrived as Sydney was riding on a crest of a wave in terms of craft beer, you know, and...
Yeah, Riverside has a big part to play in that.
Absolutely.
Well.
Yeah. Dave Padden, a local hero. You know, he's so relatable. He's so easy to talk to. And, you know, he's the home brewer who made it good, you know. And
active on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, it was a massive shock. And I was really actually quite upset at the time, you know. Not to say that I don't think Riverside can, you know, keep doing what they're doing and keep producing great beer. But, you know, just on a personal level, it was upsetting to see one of my favourite brewers... you know, leaving a post he obviously loved doing and some fantastic stuff he was able to produce while he was there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope both sides of that get to go on and do bigger and greater things. Like, I'm sure, I have no doubt that Dave has something up his sleeve or has something planning for the future, and he will be back and doing amazing things. But I hope the rest of the guys at Riverside can sort of go on and still make new good beers and might go in a different direction now with, obviously, there'll be someone new coming into the scene there. And, if we get two good breweries out of it, is that such a bad thing?
No, as long as everyone's happy. I guess you're right.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think you can keep a good brewer down. I think Dave will be back at some point very soon.
Dave pretty much walk into every single brewery in Sydney or in Australia at the moment and get some sort of job if you really needed it.
What's your resume? 777.
Look, it's a massive shock, I think, but I think a lot of people didn't see it coming, but... Hopefully everyone works out and goes on to do bigger and better things.
You've got to hope that the innovation stays there at Riverside. You know, I mean, some of the beers that have been produced in the last 12 months in particular have just been outstanding. I'm thinking, you know, Othello's Curse. I'm thinking Yeast of Bourbon. Some of the stuff that's come out of that brewery recently. And you've just got to hope that kind of innovation continues.
Yeah, definitely. I hope they don't just keep brewing the same stuff over and over again. I definitely hope there's someone there who can sort of take them to the next step and move them forward a bit more. Mm. Not that Dave wasn't doing a great job of doing that, but just you don't want to see them just keep on brewing 77 and 44 for the rest of their time without doing anything else. So
is your belief that somebody will come in, or are you thinking internally somebody will step up? And
To be honest, I don't know.
So they've got a new head brewer.
They do have a new head brewer?
Okay. Before Dave left, they hired a brewer from Mountain Goat. He's moved up to Sydney. He was going to be an assistant to Dave. He is now the head brewer.
Awesome.
Cool.
Interesting.
There's a big affinity with that brewery in Mountain Goat, isn't there?
I think the brewer's been around long enough to actually probably know the system as well. Yeah.
The brewer on it originally? Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's cool. I really hope they... the brewery can move forward and
they're
pumping out beer. There's beer coming out again, which is good to see. So
are you able to give us your view, Doc, from a brewer's perspective? Obviously you're intrinsically related into the Sydney brewing scene, and what are your thoughts on the...
Doc probably knows a lot more than anyone.
I'm sure he does. But I'm sure he's also got some personal views as well in terms of, you know.
So I was lucky enough to obviously have a heads up before it became public, and it was a shock to me as well. And probably asking all the same questions as everyone else. It's like, how and why and, you know, what the fuck and everything else. But understanding some of the backstory behind it, it's you know...
Seems like an applicable solution.
Well, whether it's a bit of an ultimatum and where we're at, it is what it is. I think that... yeah, we definitely haven't seen the last of Dave Padden.
Oh, no.
You are able to do things once you have a knowledge of the industry a lot quicker than what you're able to do it the first time around. Dave's got a few things in the pipeline. He's working on a few bits and pieces. He's well progressed with that. So, stay tuned.
Yeah, definitely.
Personally, I know Dave a lot better than I know Stephen.
Yeah.
Hopefully maintain that relationship.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Well, he certainly left the brewery in a great shape, you know. Their reach and in terms of, you know, the number of venues and, you know, their bottle distribution, you know, it's a great footing to be left on. And, you know,
hope that things continue for them and they're able to continue and grow and become bigger than they are now.
It's exciting to see what happens with Riverside this year. Most definitely.
Keep flying the flag for Sydney, I say.
Yeah. Just move it closer to Sydney.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll leave it there.
We've got one more thing quickly to talk about.
I was going to mention the Hottest 100 that is coming up next week, hopefully by the time this episode comes out.
Last week.
Yeah. It all depends on the editor. But, voting's closed. Really looking forward to the results. I think it's going to be a good year for the list.
I think it's going to be a very different year this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you really?
I think there's going to be a lot more New South Wales breweries
and higher up the list this year.
Okay.
I'm not saying that because I've seen what's in the top 10. Just saying, like, in general.
I'm not going to say anything either because I've seen it as well.
Oh, wow.
Seems like the top 10 or the whole 100?
No, I haven't seen the whole 100.
I've only seen the top 10 and not in order. But
I think you can guess the order, though.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a pale ale or an IPA, then it's probably more of the top five.
Well, I'm the only one coming to this blind, and I've got to say I struggle to see beyond
top three.
Well, I struggle to see beyond Hop Hog getting in at number one. You know, I think that's.
I have a feeling that this could be the year where Hop Hog doesn't get number one. I'm not saying that because it's something I know that other people don't. I just have a feeling. I said last year that I thought Mountain Goat Summer Ale was going to take number one, and I think I was 1 year off.
So okay. there's a couple of things which have dictated what makes the top 10 in the last 3 or so years. And from what I've seen of what's made and what hasn't, it comes down to...
Distribution.
National distribution.
Yep.
Yep.
Draft and packaged
yep.
from a premium craft brewery that does quality.
Yep. Consistently.
Yep. Mm. And if you've got those, then you've got a better chance of getting into that top spot.
Yeah, most definitely.
Top spots.
Top spots, yeah. I mean, it's not just one spot. You can make the top 20, 30 and be very happy, I think.
Yeah, a lot of the craft breweries in Australia are still regionalised into their local area or their state. And to get full national distribution in both package and draft format is quite a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
To get it into the hands of... The beer voters that vote for this outside your local area, outside your family and everything else is quite a challenge. Mm.
And I think you'd be surprised at the percentage of people who vote who actually source their beers from places like Dan Murphy's or BWS or Liquorland.
Mm.
So it's the ones, if you're in all those places and still have a grounding with the more clicky craft beer nerds, I guess you could say, is that's where you're...
Three or four years ago, you could do it based on relationships, family, and social marketing.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
It's too big now. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
So, arguably, it becomes more important year in, year out.
Yeah.
Democratic vote.
Yeah, well, the more and more people who vote from wider different areas, the better it's going to be a reading of what's actually going on in Australia.
Well, as the only person who has no insider knowledge whatsoever, I'm still going to predict... Hop Hog is number one. I just think that in terms of beer that's got great wide distribution, it's growing and growing year in, year out.
Mm-hmm.
I still have never had a bad Hop Hog in all my time of drinking it. I do think that it's in an unassailable position. So I am going to stick my neck out and say I predict Hop Hog is number one again this year.
What about Stone and Wood?
Stone and Wood is a fantastic beer.
Increased volume significantly, so therefore they've been out in a lot more places.
And if the two beers were on tap side by side, I would find that decision really, really hard.
Yeah.
Possibly would prefer personally Stone and Wood over Hop Hog slightly. If I was to try and pick the better beer, I'm not sure I could.
The other trend
I think we'll see this year is there's a lot of new entrants into the market that only have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
And if they are doing dilution of votes based on getting some pickup from their local area versus what would be voted on from a national brand. And I don't want to pick on anyone in particular, but take Bridge Road, for example. They produce 20 to 30 different beers a year.
And cracking beers.
And out of those, they're always amazing, but out of those, you get maybe five or six that are just, for a beer geek value, are just absolute standouts. but the dilution of votes for people
who support Bridge Road,
it's going to be split. Yeah, judging for Bridge Road, the different
always
beers.
Means they average 5-ish a year in there. I think this year you may see that reduce because of the new entrants in and the bigger pool to vote for.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen over a couple of years. Even with me, I think the first year I might have got 3 in, I think 2, and then I think last year I only got 1.
Right.
So if I get anything in, I'm happy because...
Well, I mean, going on what we're talking about with your national distribution for the last
maybe
4 months...
come through next year.
Maybe, but you would hope that...
Maybe a bit later this year, but maybe higher than the year before. But I mean, surely you've got to be eyeing up next year, right?
See how we go.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, let's take a break.
Sessionable.
So we've each got 2 glasses. One glass contains the bottled version, and the other glass contains the keg version, which has been poured out of a growler. We don't know which one's which.
No idea which
one's
which.
Can you spot the difference?
So straight away, I think there's a. You can tell with the head, there's a difference.
Yes.
One of them's got a much fluffier head.
Yep.
Yep.
And the other.
So one's got a more lingering one, but it does dissipate. Mm. But when it came out, it was a really tight, consistent, white, creamy head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was holding, whereas the other one was probably a little bit less.
Yeah, but you can work the other one. It's definitely still got some carbonation there. It's not flat at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference on the aroma. So the one that had a slightly more intense foam on it also had a more aromatic nose to it.
You get more of the spice, I think, off the one with the bigger head. Mm. And the other one has a bit more of that sugar candy sort of and banana ester. But you don't get the depth of all the spice of the other one.
And it's also got a slight darker...
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, the other one's a little bit lighter in colour, isn't it?
Slightly deeper.
Yeah.
In colour.
More vibrant, I would say.
It's almost like there's a slight filtration difference. Very slight.
Would you expect a colour difference, Doc?
These two beers were produced in 2 different breweries.
Okay.
2 slightly different recipes.
And time difference between the two?
3 weeks.
Okay.
So the draft version I brewed at the Australian Hotel and Brewery in beginning of November,
mm-hmm.
so that it was kegged end of November and available in market beginning of December, because this is our summer beer.
Yep.
Beginning of December's summer. The bottled version I brewed at Nomad Brewing, and I didn't brew it until the middish November, because we had to wait until we got P12 out of the tank and everything else to free up
mm-hmm.
brew capacity, which meant that the bottled version of Zephyr only became carbonated and ready about Christmas Eve. So essentially what we're talking about is a 3-week difference in terms of the beer being ready between draft and bottled.
And did you have any expectation of what you thought the differences would be between the bottled version and
I expected
the
bottled version to be a little bit drier.
Yep.
I expected everything else to be within tolerance. The one thing I was a bit wary about was how the botanicals were going to come through,
mm-hmm.
Namely the lemon myrtle, and how the utilization of putting lemon myrtle in 2 different brew houses within the same sort of volumes and ratios was going to work.
Yeah.
Being that they are both steam driven, but one's a 2 vessel brew house and the other one's essentially like a 3-4 vessel brew house. So.
Did you expect there to be much difference in the conditioning of the beers with that 3-week gap? Anything discernible within that time?
No, so the draft is a forced carbonated one. Once the beer's done, it's forced carbonated, goes into draft, and that's it.
Yeah.
The bottled version is bottle conditioned.
Yeah.
So it's kept warm once it's bottled for at least 14 days, 11 to 14 days. We test to see how carbonation is going, and then we, you know, if it's carbonated, then whatever, basically turn the get them out of the warming room and it comes back down to ambient. Then it goes into distribution centres, which are cold. So, so I've only had a sip of each. I think I know what's what.
What order should we do this?
I think I know what's what as well.
I'm struggling. I can definitely tell the difference
between the two. On three, we point at the keg, or
I'm struggling. I can definitely tell the difference between the two, but I'm getting myself confused as far as
let's
what's
let's do on three. We'll point to the ones the one we think is the draft version. Does that sound
okay?
Good. Mm-hmm. All right, one, two, three.
So I think we've 50-50 split here. Doc and I have gone with the non-labelled glass for the draft, and Liam and Adrian have gone with the labelled one for the draft.
So which one is it, Lee?
Oh, we got it right?
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. All right.
I'm going to confess to kind of cheating.
So Adrian and Liam have got it right. The brewer's got it wrong.
I only said that because I got a bit of oxidation on the one that I pointed to, and I know that's from Growler Phil, so that was the only thing that I could tell.
That's your BJCP training coming into its own there, that is.
Other than that, flavor-wise, they're very similar. I think, actually, the bottle one has a bit more...
I found the bottle one a bit more brighter in flavour.
The bottle one's definitely got more of the lemon myrtle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I absolutely found that. Yep.
More of the botanical side of the beer.
Mm.
It also isn't quite as sweet, so it's part of the oxidation piece on the other side.
Mm.
It's drier, which you normally expect with a bottle, but I expected that to be the draft one.
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't detect that oxidation, I probably would have gone the same way you guys went.
So can we say which we prefer?
I prefer the bottle.
Yeah, I prefer the bottle.
I prefer the bottle too.
Yeah.
I think it's because of that more rounded, you know, you get, like you say, the lemon myrtle coming through a bit more.
It's got more balance.
Yeah.
The other one is almost a bit, so the brewing term for judging would be called flabby.
A bit dull. Yeah, I find it a bit dull and a bit sweeter. That's why I thought that way. I just found the bottle version a bit brighter, a bit more. Mm. Everything was a bit more lifted.
Interesting.
Mm.
All right,
but still holding up very well.
I'm not going to blend. I'm going to keep them separate.
As we as we finish this beer, I guess we can. Let's just catch up with you, Doc. What have you been up to since the last time we had a chat with you? And you know, how's business been going? How the bottles been going?
It was vaccine, wasn't it? The last time we caught up.
It was. We did it in the Frankie's fun room just before we launched vaccine in Frankie's.
While the poor bartender was trying to open the bar while being very quiet
and slice up loads of ginger, right?
So what's that? That's probably about. Would have been about April?
Yeah, probably about 8 months ago.
Yeah. I gave you guys some scoops, and then you sat on the episode for a few weeks, and by the time
we got
there weren't scoops anymore.
Everyone knew about it.
I'd done it.
Yeah.
So yeah, last 2014. It was the biggest year for Doctor's Orders. We did a full run for the full 12 months of everything that I wanted to do for a long time.
Good.
So we did the four core seasonals for Zephyr. I think would have been the fourth year. Iron Lung, Plasma Prescription 12 were 3 and 4, depending on where they fitted. we did four mid seasonals. We did a festival beer for Gabs. We did a collaboration with Bacchus, Yeasty Boys, Weedy, and 6 Point from New York.
Yeah.
We did 3 barrel-aged beers as well last year, so 3 derivatives of 3 of the mid-seasonals, 2 of the mid-seasonals and 1 of the cores. So it's like 16 beers or something stupid. And we also released the first 2 of the bottles. So in terms of what you want to achieve in the year and think you can actually do it,
it's a fuckload.
It was pretty insane, and the finish line was not quite falling over it, but I got there. And this year the concept has been scaled back just a little bit, just because but it's self preservation and everything else. But also the focus is changing. Focus is changing for doctor's orders, but the whole craft beer scene is changing as well.
Definitely, I think it's going to be a very big year for change in the craft beer industry.
There's we're not seeing as much movement of the bigger specialty beers through craft beer outlets. The venues that I was selling to 3 or 4 years ago that would buy, the volumes that I buy of 7.5% special seasonals versus what they're buying now, with the number of new entrants to the markets doing cheaper beers that are, whether they're pale ales or summer ales or whatevers, it means that, for some of the more established ones, we aren't the new thing on the block anymore. We aren't seen as being the one they've got to have. There's always something else that they can put on, something else that's a bit new and different. So the early adopters are having to change a little bit. So for me, that's not too difficult this year. It means that there will be a drop in draft volume for me, but it also works nicely with the transition to bottles.
But on the other side of that, wouldn't you be getting a lot of more people trying your beers for the first time because they're getting bottles into areas that you couldn't get kegs into before?
Absolutely. And they are typically people who live in areas where they don't have access to craft beer venues doing drafts. Yeah. So when we sort of stepped out into bottles, I expected the uptake to predominantly be people that already knew the brand, associated with it, and wanted to then have it in a bottle and take it home. And there was a lot of that, and that was fantastic, but we're also finding a lot of people that are buying the bottled product through the stores that are stocking it are people that have never even heard of Doctor's Orders, but they haven't had Doctor's Orders. They may have heard of it, and now they're seeing it, and they've got access to it, and they're buying it. And it's almost like a renaissance for Doctor's Orders, of a rebirth of the company for all these people that haven't heard of it before.
Yeah.
The untapped check-ins, the photos, the social media, the Instagrams, the everything else has just gone insane in the last 2 months. Based on that, the average ratings for Zephyr and P12 and Untapped have gone up by 0.2-ish, which is
getting a big jump
up. So the average ratings for the beers based on the bottled product is pushing.
It's fantastic.
The beers up themselves. So that's what we're focusing on this year, is more about the packaged product. It means you probably noticed there was no Midsummer.
Yeah.
There was no Berliner Weiss this year.
Yeah.
I had one ready to roll. I knew what I wanted to be, but just the logistics of actually doing a beer as a mid-seasonal when we did draft and bottled for a late spring.
Well, the way that P12 and Zephyr sort of came out and bottled, it sort of filled that gap anyway to a degree, didn't it?
It did, but there was a beer that I really want to do. And
Wild Testicle, Berliner Weiss.
No.
With balsamic vinegar.
So it's still up my sleeve. Hopefully Midsummer next year it'll come back and I'll do that one. There will probably not be a mid-autumn one either, because we're now coming through the summer, the end of spring, which was almost the beginning of summer for the bottles. We've got the Zephyr in both formats out and about. We've got Iron Lung is in the planning at the moment, so we're brewing that in a couple of weeks. So that'll be out beginning of March in both draft and bottled form. Once we get over that hurdle, then we're moving into festival territory as well.
Gabs beers.
So I've got to do something for Gabs. I've already locked in one collaboration for the year. There's a couple more in the works. So whereas last year we did, sort of 12 with 3 or so barrel versions, 15 or so beers, I think we'll be lucky if we get over probably 10 this year. In terms of volume, it's probably about the same, but it's going to be more towards the package than it is going to be on draft.
Cool. That's great.
I was going to say, you know, it sounded like that was gearing up towards a lack of collaborations and a lack of new beers. And as someone who gets a real unique tingly feeling whenever I see a new Dock beer, the prospect of a 2015 without anything new coming out was filling me with dread. But 10 new collaborations is something I can live with.
No, don't 10 new collaborations. There's a couple on the go. And one of them is going to be a very, very small scale, but what I've got in mind is going to be pretty, pretty crazy and awesome. But you might have to get yourself into state to be there for some of it.
Sounds like a challenge.
the other focus is also to start pushing the brand further afield. So. Expert. Like what we started tonight with a Beavertown can, yep. In order to still grow and get it to where it needs to be to keep it relevant and keep it growing, means international distribution. So we've done a little bit of that to New Zealand. We've also had beers on draft in Malaysia recently as well. End of last year, and we have got some international shipments coming up end of the month as well to sort of the global market. So hopefully that keeps going the right way, and having a beer and package makes that more accessible, because the draft market for international is small. Mm. Package market internationally, if you have a strong brand and good beers and a decent following and some reputation, is almost endless.
Particularly when your packaged product is coming out as good as it is at the moment.
Yeah, it's looking pretty cracking.
Yeah. Maybe you can be the West Letteren of Australia.
Put no label on it, put a cap on it.
Yeah, like $50 a bottle in the US.
Brewed by Dr. Monks.
Yeah.
So we actually took a bit of feedback on board as well. So we did some mock-ups of what the bottles were going to look like in May last year, and started showing that around the Good Beer Week in Melbourne, Gabs Festival and everything else, saying, you know, bottles are coming, this is what they're going to look like. And the feedback was fantastic. One piece of feedback that I took on was that the Iron Lung and the Plasma look quite similar, and they are back to back releases.
Yeah.
So one is more of a greeny yellow, and the other one was more of a yellow green. And if you were to send someone to the bottle shop to buy it for you and say it's the yellow one or it's the green one,
confusing.
It could be confusing. So
especially seeing there will be a period where they're both on the shelves at the same time,
and they're two very, very different looking beers when you actually get them out of the bottle as well.
Yeah. One's a white IPA and one's a black Imperial Pilsner. So, yeah. So we have stayed with the yellow. We have stayed with the green, but we've made them very distinct.
Okay.
We've also learnt from the feedback that we see on social media, Untappd and Instagram and Twitter and everything else, on how it looks when it's photographed and everything else as well. The crimson of P12 just is like stands out like dog's bollocks.
Yeah.
The Zephyr, for the most part, stands out pretty well, unless you've got really shitty camera phone and whatever else, and can look pretty saturated and everything else, but it still sort of stands. Definitely. So we've gone for it's almost like a fluoro yellow for the Plasma, and I can't remember that's actually yellow sea or whatever it is, the Pantone colour for Plasma, and the green, I can't remember what the Pantone colour is, but they are now very discreet, like, it's one like is quite, yellow quite and one is green.
Like grass green. Kind
so of, yeah. The yellow with the lighter beer in behind it will be yellow, and the green with the darker beer in behind it will be more of a bold green. Mm-hmm. And it'll be without being a grass green or a British Racing green or whatever. It's green.
Yeah.
So
sweet.
So I'm looking forward to seeing those on bottles and hopefully not seeing all four on a shelf. That means
stocks ain't moving.
That means the venue's not selling too much beer.
Question for you, Doc. Of your collaborations and new beers that you brought out last year, which are you most proud of?
Good one.
Three beers were collaborations last year, and I'm very proud of each of them because they were each very individual and quite distinct beers.
Yep.
If I was to lean on one, I'd probably go for the Yeasty Boys Weedy Tonic.
Okay.
Mm. It wasn't as socially accepted as much as I accepted it, because I just thought it was something quite different, in that the beer was the tonic and you put gin to it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whilst that violates some laws in a number of states, I'm sure you're allowed to do that. But in terms of a concept where beer can be something more than beer, and beer can be paired with spirits, and beer is designed to be the tonic for a spirit, and if you had the right type of gin, it was a cucumber-based gin and everything else, it turned the beer from being interesting and okay and just, it's a beer, to wow.
And that appeals to the undergraduate and everyone, right? You know, who makes cocktails laced with beer as the... as the base, you know.
Well, my assistant manager at work is a mad beer fiend, but also the biggest gin nerd of all time.
Okay,
and that was like a raging hard-on for him. Like, yeah.
And it's interesting to see that it's now there's a few other people following that footstep. It's like there's now sort of a concept. Oh, it's just, you know, just... And that, the whole concept for that was just Stu and I just having a chat, talking about some shit. And he goes, I want to make a beer with you called Tonic. It's like, well, if I'm making a beer with you called Tonic, then it's got to be a tonic.
Yeah.
So if it's a tonic, then the beer is the tonic for something like gin. And he goes, well, I'm a gin fiend. He's like, right. He goes, and then he said, well, I've always wanted to make a beer with chicana bark. I said, well, soda water is with chicana bark. So the beer, the tonic, fuck, let's just do that. And then we spent 4 months working out how we're going to get chicana bark. Seriously, 4 months working it, and he may have just managed to slip some into the country on his body.
How about you two guys? Because I don't mind saying, I mean, my favourite was the Bacchus collaboration. It was so close to making my
that was my top five.
It was number
well.
Six for me was the Bacchus Sour. I absolutely loved it.
What I really liked about the Bacchus collab was it was very much a Doc's beer and it was very much a Bacchus beer at the same time.
Yep.
And it was just so different to anything else that I'd tried as well. It just had so many different flavor profiles to it.
So there was another interesting conversation. Is that Ross and I were talking about doing a beer. And I was coming up to Brisbane. He's like, all right, let's make a beer while you're here. And he goes, oh, what do you want to make? And I said, look, you know, I've just done this. You know, I've done Electrolyte and it's a Ghost or whatever. The next leap from there is to do a Lichtenhainer. And I've done a number of Lichtenhainers before at home and everything else. So it's like, fuck it, let's just go to the next level. Let's just do a Lichtenhainer. He goes, oh, we did one of those once. I think it's the only beer we never really sold out. I think it's the only one we probably tipped some of it out. He goes, you sure you want to do that? It's like, yeah. I've got a recipe or whatever. And he goes, yeah, I've got this other book and everything else. And we went backwards and forwards. And we managed to compromise on a recipe to brew a Lichtenhainer based on my experience with doing Lichtenhainer and what they had previously done.
Yeah.
And then he said, all right, so if we do all that, and then we add some chipotles to it. It's like, well, I've never added chipotles to beer. But I know you have, and so like, if we're going to do all this sort of stuff, and that's your piece, and that's your twist, and everything else on it, then I'm cool with that, and we'll go with that. So I went up to Brisbane. I was up there. I went and brewed the beer with the boys, and we did 400 litres. And we did, so we got 4 kegs of the base exhumed, so Dr. Bacchus exhumed. Mm. Which I didn't get to taste before it was kegged and then had the chipotles and everything else, but they almost missed the chipotles until Ross was talking to me. Oh, yeah, we're about to keg it. It's all right. How did you go with the chipotles? Oh, yeah, we're going to add chipotles. Oh, yeah, better do that. And by the way, I need a keg in Sydney by next week. And so that almost got missed, but it got in there. And the other part of the batch is in an Octomore cask that we did with,
I was going to say, there wasn't a lot released, so where's the rest of it, right?
So
now we know.
So which is a complete sour with Brett and everything else.
Oh, wow.
So that same day went in there. So of the 4 kegs from the base, Lichtenhainer exhumed, one went to Scratch Bar, been and gone. One went to the Royal Albert, been and gone. One was at the Ale House Project last week, been and gone. There's one left in my possession.
Nice.
Jade, if you're listening, it's earmarked for you.
You're going to crack after the pod is finished, right?
And the Octomore, we will be lucky to get maybe 350s and a bit of change out of that. Probably mid-year, it might be close to being ready.
Nice.
And we might do something with that.
Dibs.
There's a couple of events coming up up that way in Brisbane that may be a fit for that.
All right.
So the other one, I guess, was a 6-point. That was a lot of fun. Really interesting beer.
I'm surprised nobody said Operation Paralysis, actually.
Not good for the cash flow.
Yeah.
Beer almost killed me.
Why?
It was
a very expensive beer to make.
Expensive beer to make.
It was a lot in that beer.
There's a lot of excise in that beer.
Yeah.
The keg price on that beer. We still have a few kegs of it still in the distribution centres, but we're pretty much at the end of it. I do really, really love that beer. I'm probably a little bit tarnished by just the
experience
of doing it and everything else. I knew I couldn't do it on my own as a sort of something that big. It needed to be a collaboration. Needed to have another name behind it. I now feel for people like Feral and Nail and Bridge Road, who do things like Aurora Borealis and Aurora Australis and Nail Stout and Boris and stuff like that, where they only brew it once a year because it is such an intensive beer, such an expensive beer, and it's such a slow mover just because of the price point and the market that's actually going to pay for that, and the venues that can actually afford to put it on tap and serve it and do it justice. So
how did you find the experience of working with Shane? Was he demanding to work with, or easy, or
it was a breeze? So we went it was pretty easy coming up with an idea and a concept, backwards and forwards on email, a couple of chats. The downside was he ended up in a motorcycle accident before he was due to jump on the plane and come down and actually brew it with me. So he brewed it in via iMessage from his hospital bed.
Wow.
As we did it, sending him updates along the way, and then
I guess there's a limit to how demanding you can be over iMessage, right?
Yeah. So luckily we already had the recipe in and everything else. He just wasn't able there, so what we did is we got his face off Google Images, did a cutout and put it on Maddie at, and said, "Hey, yeah, you're Shane." and put a 6-point sticker on the control board at Rocks Brewing, where we brewed that beer and did it that way. And once he was healed and all good, he came down for Sydney Craft Beer Week. Cool. And then I got a chance to actually share Operation Paralysis with him in person, and we got to hang out and have dinner and drinks.
Was he happy with it?
He loved it.
Yeah,
he loved
Excellent.
It. Excellent. So,
Does he have any plans to brew it over there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay,
too expensive.
But even down to, so again, pretty much everything we do is down to details. So even before we brewed it, we'd worked out, one, what it was called, what the colours needed to be on the decal, how we're going to blend the 6-point and the Doctor's Orders logos together. And so even if you've seen the Operation Paralysis glass artwork for the decals and everything else, it's the 6-point orange, the brown, the intersecting triangles or
really
trapeziums and everything else.
Yeah.
And that was 6-point. Graphic designers New York, working with my graphic designer in Scotland.
Oh, wow. So it's a proper collaboration
with
then,
Shane and I saying yes, no, whatever as we went through it and three iterations, bang, that's it.
Yeah.
Was that the first time you had the varying hues of colour in the actual beer glass?
And a full white head on the top of the glass versus a template version which is in all the others. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Alright, so on to the next doc beer blind tasting. We're on to the prescription 12.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah.
I'll take yours, don't worry.
I'm very jaded after the first round of getting my own beer wrong as to what was draft and what was bottled.
I thought you were going to have a very unfair advantage over that one. But
I thought I was safe when I went with Doc.
I thought the first one was going to be the easy one. Now I'm second guessing myself, and I haven't even tasted it yet, I'm just smelling it.
These ones smell very similar, so this is going to be pretty difficult, I think.
Oh my god, they taste amazing too.
Well, going back to the basics, like we did the first one, there is definitely a difference in head retention, again.
The one with the label.
But it seems to be the other way around.
Is it?
Have I got my glasses the wrong way
around? You may have your glasses the wrong way around, because my labelled glass has got the bigger head again.
I can't tell which one. Oh, no, that's the labelled one.
Yeah.
It's kind of a thicker head, and it's also kind of got more air bubbles in it, too. That was the same as with the Zephyr.
Yeah. So when I first had this in the bottle, the main difference I thought was the mouthfeel.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But I don't think I've had... What was the...
I can't tell now.
What was the... So we were saying with the Zephyr about the difference in brews between the keg and the bottle. So what's the difference with these two here?
Same. So the draft was... I brewed out at the Australian Brew at Rouse Hill. And I brewed that beginning of August. Probably the second week of August. So that was in the market beginning of September. So September is the start of spring. That's when Prescription 12 comes out. The bottled version is a bit different in that I did brew it about 3 weeks after I brewed the kegged version, because we reused the yeast out of the Australian brewery and I transported it across to Nomad where I did the bottled version.
Okay, interesting.
So,
is it like a special yeast?
It is. It's the Belgian Trappist high gravity yeast. So basically we harvested the yeast from the Australian, used that for the beer that I did at the... did it Nomad for the bottles. The bottled version was ready to bottle in 2.5-ish weeks, close to 3 weeks. It didn't get bottled for 6 weeks. So we brewed the beer in anticipation of the parts arriving for the bottling line to be able to do 500ml bottles. Nomad only do 330ml bottles for their beers. We were retooling the bottling line to do 500s for me. We had advice that the parts had been ordered, they'd been delivered to Beer de Borgo in Italy, and they were en route to Australia. So if we brewed the beer, by the time the parts arrived,
be good to go. Yeah,
rock and roll. It didn't quite turn out like that. The parts did finally arrive at Beer de Borgo after we brewed the beer. They made their way to Australia. They got stuck in customs because someone hadn't filled out the right paperwork as to what's what. Then they did arrive, and it was also around then Sydney Craft Beer Week, and there's some international rock stars, brew stars in the country. So so Brooks was also doing some collab beers with them, doing a bit of a tour of the country. So it didn't get bottled until probably... just the week after City Craft Beer Week finished, which meant it was beginning in November, that P12 finally made it into bottle carbonated and into the market. So,
how long was it conditioned for?
So basically, it was sitting, ready to rock and roll, sitting cold in the tank, yeasted off, everything else, just waiting for parts for 3 to 4 weeks.
And then how long was it bottle conditioned for?
It was ready in 11 days.
Right.
That's pretty impressive.
I'm pretty confident I can pick these two out.
I'm not super confident, but I think I know.
In terms of colour, having tasted in terms both of everything before, else, yeah. after they've settled down,
they look very similar.
Identical.
Yeah. Yeah. They both look very dark brown.
I would say one has a slightly darker tinge to the
head.
Foam.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's slight, though. It's minimal.
The flavour on the mouth is so close. It's
I'm more confident on this one than I was on the Zephyr. Let's put it that way.
I think it still comes down to mouthfeel.
Shall we do this then?
Hang on, I haven't made one. Because I was getting a different aroma off one early that I'm not getting now.
Yeah. Something's dissipated. So all your bottling has been done at Nomad?
Yes.
How are you transporting the beer from Rocks or AB Brewing over to Nomad to bottle?
No, I brew there. So two separate brew days, two separate brew houses.
You brew and bottle at Nomad.
So I brew and bottle at Nomad's for bottles.
Sorry, I thought you said the Zephyr you'd brewed at.
No, nope, same.
Okay, sorry. Yep. My bad.
Do you think that's likely to continue, that you'll do cask? Oh, sorry. You will do...
cask. Ooh,
you will do keg beer at another venue? Or
no, so for Iron Lung, again... So what we talked about earlier about the distribution between draft and bottles for doctor's orders this year, the Iron Lung is going to be the first primary core that won't be brewed at the Australian. It will all be brewed at Nomad, and it will be both bottle and keg will be conditioned in.
Oh wow! Cool.
In vessel, so
and all from the same brew,
all from the same brew. Yeah.
So you're going to use the same recipe that way then?
Yes, nice. Because otherwise the draft version will be 0.5% lower in alcohol than the bottled version. Because if we did a forced carbonation of the kegs coming out and
condition the bottles,
and then condition the bottles, there's going to be 0.5% difference.
Do you expect to see the differences lessen as a result?
So the difficulty for me is instructing the venues that what you've always had as being forced carbonated beers whatever is now going to be keg conditioned. So once you receive it, you need to let it sit for a day or so to make sure.
Might be a bit flat to start off with.
Shouldn't be flat. The way we are going to do it is probably a little bit different to the way the Nomad's doing some of the other stuff at the moment.
Right.
Just to for the type of beer it is and the way that I want it done. Because I've seen some of the variances in draft from some of their other products. So there's not a lot of... there's not going to be a huge amount of draft. The focus is on package, but I want to make sure the draft stands up to the package and market. So the what we're going to use as the priming is going to change from what we've done for the other two, just to make sure it's consistent across both.
Okay. I just want to say, you know, from a personal perspective, I know I've talked before about my own experiences back in the UK and how I was born and bred on cask ale. Mm-hmm. And to me, there was just a world of difference between draft beer and bottled beer. You know, bottled beer just could not cope or even hold a torch to cask ale. Even bottle-conditioned beer, you know, you just couldn't hope to get the kind of body and the kind of depth of flavour that you could with cask ale. And, you know, part of my learning experience of being over here is, you know, being appreciating what the bottle can actually deliver. And that's, you know, been further compounded by today, I think, you know.
I mean, I thought coming into this that it would be a lot easier to pick the P12s over the Zephyrs. But I've got to say, these two are pretty bloody close.
These are closer than the Zephyrs,
yeah,
I think.
Most definitely. Like,
yeah, definitely.
I think that's a good testament to what you've done, Doc. I think
I know which way I'm going to go on this one now.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
What are we picking?
Should we pick the draft?
Pick draft on three.
One, two, three.
So I've gone non-label.
I've gone label.
Doc's gone non-label.
So Adrian and I have done the same. And
Liam's gone non-label.
So I'm the only one who's gone label.
Ooh. What is...
Oh, Brad's yes!
Wow.
Okay.
There you go.
So Doc's gone 0 for 2 for his own beers.
Do you know what?
No, you're a 1 and 1 and I'm none for 2.
Yeah. You know what? I had a real kind of epiphany moment when I actually took a bottle. You very kindly gave me some bottles, and one of which I gave to a friend of yours back in the UK, and one I had for myself. I actually cracked a bottle open on Christmas Day and shared it around my family, and they were pretty gobsmacked by the P12 on Christmas Day. They really were. It was a kind of real wow sort of moment for them. And for me too, it was the first time I'd had P12 in the bottle, and I actually think this beer has come alive in the bottle.
It's amazing.
I think it is fantastic out of the bottle. Mm. And it, you know, bodes well for your stuff packaged in the future.
It does, because part of the reason that it's in packaged is so that it can get further afield. And it's not pasteurized and it's not anything else. It's bottle conditioned. The reason it's bottle conditioned is hopefully it'll stand up better in bottle in market, and also help with the export side of things. So if you look at some of the bigger craft breweries in the world, it's bottle conditioned is what goes out.
Yep.
And for the most part, they stand up better doing that. For me, the reason I chose the other one, I thought which now turns out to be the draft version, had a bit more bitterness in it, and I thought that probably would have come from the bottle.
I felt that both the Zephyr and the P12 had a kind of almost greener taste to them. There was a kind of more
in
of
the
a,
bottle or
the draft.
Yeah,
both had a bigger head. Both had that better lace retention, and I felt that they didn't quite have the same variety and depth of flavour that the bottle did either. You know, and that's why I went with that. I thought it was a
I thought it was the obvious choice, guys. Sorry.
For me, it was tough because I was going by flavour from what I've had before. And I thought that the one that I picked wasn't quite as smooth as what turned out to be the draft one. Because when I had the bottled P12, I thought it was really smooth compared to the to the draft version. But, you know, having it side by side, it's actually really hard to tell.
So, Doc, have you done this before with your beers?
No.
No? So this is a first for you too?
Well, I haven't been packaged before.
Yeah, so, I know. Well, you've been packaged for 3-4 weeks.
Yep. Well, since beginning of November. So, no, I haven't done a side-by-side. This is it.
Excellent. Is defibrillated due for a bottle release later?
No. So the only ones we're doing in bottles this year is the Four Cores. We are working on a year-round release.
Okay.
That will be in a bottle format, but that's not due until probably end of the year.
Okay.
And it probably won't be in the 500ml format.
Sessionable. Okay, so last beer of the evening. Something a little bit special that my lovely lady wife has brought back from New York City.
Thank you.
This is Captain Lawrence Brewery from New York State. And this is their...
Frost Monster.
Frost Monster Imperial Stout.
Great name.
So for an Imperial Stout, it weighs in at...
11?
I can't find it on the label. It
has to be on there somewhere.
It's got a bit of frostbite on it. Ooh.
I don't think you need to say in New York.
But if it's Imperial, it's got to be at least 9, right?
I'm going to pick that as like 12 or something. It's got a bit of warmth to it.
Got a frostbite to it.
Yeah. Definitely warm.
So a couple of us have heard of Captain Lawrence.
Yeah, can you tell us anything about the brewery?
Oh.
Do you know much about
all them? I know is that they were... When I heard that my wife was going to New York, I went online and tried to find not just American breweries I wanted to bring back, but also local New York breweries, and this was the highest rated brewery on Rate Beer.
Awesome.
For New York City. I think they came in at 94% for all of their beers.
Wow. Yeah.
I understand that they do some bloody lovely IPAs as well as darker beers as well, so the instruction was Imperial anything, bring it back. and this is what I've got. So.
Yeah, nice. This was definitely one of the ones that people over there were recommending to me when I was in New York. And I had their IPA. I can't remember what it was like.
Do you know if it's a seasonal beer or if it's a year-around release?
I'm not sure. This one is, I can confirm it's 12%.
12%.
Okay. Imperial Stout. It's
definitely out there.
I'm going to have a quick taste.
Yep. It's got a really dark tan head to it. A proper stout head.
It's definitely got some warmth behind it, doesn't it? Yeah, hits the back of your throat a little bit.
Yes.
Not in an unbalanced way, but...
Has a pretty aggressive bitterness to it as well.
It's got a really long finish. You know it's got some booze behind it, but it's not... It doesn't quite hit that boozy...
No, I wouldn't say it's boozy.
It's not overly phenolic, you're right. It's, it's pretty much nailed on, really, in terms of...
Yeah, it does have a lot of length to it, though, doesn't it?
Mm.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you, Emma.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Thank you. What's the female version of a beer mule?
I don't know. What's a female mule? Producer Lee, do you know?
No, he's
shaking his head. No.
He's too busy drinking.
I think he's checking in on it.
He had one job, Jesus Christ.
So, I guess... let's wrap up the show with some recommendations. Should we do non-beer first, beer first?
I've got to pass on the non-beer. I don't have one.
Okay, let's do beer.
My life is only beer.
That's your non-beer recommendation. Drink some beer.
Screw this non-beer stuff. That's his recommendation. Beer recommendations. You want to go first, Brad?
Okay. Having come from a very good... event earlier on this evening. Bitterfew had five taps dedicated to La Sirene Brewery.
How's the Praline holding up?
First of all, what a fine brewery they are. Praline was certainly in my top five for the Hottest 100 vote this year.
Same here.
just an astounding beer in terms of as soon as you approach it and begin to smell it, it's just one of the most amazing noses on any beer I've ever tried. It is very sweet, admittedly, but it holds up. As far as I'm concerned, it's not too sweet. Mm. You can get through a midi of it.
Yeah.
Possibly not too much more than that, but...
That's good.
Well, yeah. Adrian can get through more than a midi of it.
Yeah.
A very worthy beer, and I think, based on how previous Gab's winning beers have done in the Hottest 100, I would hope that that would be pushing the top 10 this year. But otherwise, the brewer's a very approachable guy, really enthusiastic, a massive kind of wine connoisseur as well as a beer connoisseur. He knows what he wants to achieve. He's really, really intelligent and learned in terms of his beer. He very much aims to get his Saison-type style and farmhouse-type style beers as close to the true style as possible. And I think he does a really good job at achieving it. Personally, on a personal level, that's not a style that I've been really favourable with up until now, but he's helped introduce me to that style of beer and helped me love that style of beer as well.
Awesome.
He does a wheat beer called Floret.
Yeah.
Thank you, Adrian, which I think is fantastic, and it's a beer that I could finish every day drinking, you know. Finish your day's work, have a floret, and suddenly the rest of the day seems a lot better.
Nice.
So my recommendation is La Sirene if you are lucky enough to find them.
I'm going to have a cop out and recommend the same beer. So, Liam?
I tried a few times this week down at the Forest Lodge the new Kelador from Four Pines, which is a summer saison.
Okay.
Really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. To be honest, yeah, like I went down to the Lodge a couple of times this week, and first time I went down there, I was asked the bar guys, what's on tap, what's good? And I was like, oh man, I've got this amazing Saison. I was like, oh yeah, I like Saisons, what's that? And I was like, oh, it's from Four Pines. And I was like, a little bit like, oh, that's not a style of beer I've seen come out of that brewery, I'm not sure. They're like, no, it's really good. So I had a few of them. Had a couple of jugs of it, and it went down very well.
That's weird, because I was up at Four Pines at the brew pub at the weekend, and they didn't have that on as their Kelador. They had three other Kelador beers on, and they didn't have the Saison on.
Maybe they hadn't tapped it yet or something. But yeah, no.
That's cool.
It's on at the Forest Lodge right now. Really,
so would you say that was a true-to-style Saison? Would you say it was an Aussie-type Saison?
I think my producer's just showing me they've labelled it as a Christmas Saison.
Okay.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, ticked all the boxes. Very much a farmhouse in style. Maybe a little bit thicker in mouthfeel, but yeah, it was great. I loved it.
Cool.
Doc, have you had anything you want to...
Yeah, the one for me end of last year would be the Bridge Road Batch 1000.
Oh, I haven't tried that
yet, yeah.
So it came in my Christmas beer advent box.
Nice.
From Bridge Road. And... Bridge Road do most of their beers packaged, and they do it in different formats depending on what it is. So you got the Chevalier range and everything else, which are in the champagne bottles. You've got the bigger, like the Batch 1000s, and you got the 330s and everything else. So it is like a beer event calendar. It's like you've got different size brown paper bags with you don't know what you're going to get, and you put them in the fridge and you open them that day. And so the two ones that I was really keen to make sure that were in that case was the Batch 1000, which was fantastic. The balance of flavors, everything else about it, I want to have it again.
I've always wanted to try an Imperial Stout from them. So,
and the other one was the B4 Mac4.
Nice. Mm, yeah,
They were the two that stood out for me end of last year in the timeframes that we're talking here.
Fantastic.
For local beers that you can still go out and find.
Yeah, awesome.
I think I'm going to go out tomorrow and try to get a bottle of that.
So before we finish, I got one more question for you, Doc. What's it like being stable mates with some of your fellow brewers in the Birra Italiana stable?
It's good. It's just like chatting with mates. So Hendo and I obviously get on really well.
Yeah.
Matt... I don't know very well at all. I don't think we've probably even met in person.
Matt from
Boat Rocker.
Okay.
Obviously, Brooks and Leo, I know pretty well, as well as some of the other guys around the Beardaborgo side of things. As we went through the whole process of, you know, when I signed with Experience It, it was because I was looking for distribution for my draft product. I had visions of doing a package product, but it wasn't with them. I had other intentions, and when they fell through, and then the bottling line and at Nomad and everything else, and that came online, and then discussions with Johnny and Leo and everything else got us to the point that we've had my beer in bottles tonight. That was that was after the fact of signing with them. So the ability to get access to people like Shane and do a collaboration with Six Point. That actually happened before I'd even signed with Experience It. So that was already something that was in the works. As I wouldn't say it was a hook to come on board, but it was something of you know, access to some of those. We do have contacts through the Beardaborgo, through other pieces and pieces. Obviously, I have quite an extensive network from what I've done. They do as well. I wouldn't have probably caught up or got to spend time with a number of the other guys in their portfolio as well. So it is great to be in a stable with them. It's not the be all and end all, but it is nice to be part of that. Just hanging out with Stu from Magic Rock, Toby from Tool, Shane from Six Point, those sort of guys, just hanging out, having beers and just talking shit.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Sometimes talking hop chemistry. Toby's in the middle of finalizing his PhD in hop science and stuff like that.
Wow.
From Tool and stuff like that, and he's talking about the finer nuances of, you know,
alpha acids and
and influences of hops on yeast cells within fermentation and that sort of shit. Yeah, that's cool. You got to make yourself a part of the industry. You got to put yourself out there, and just keep being part of it. If you think you can be part of the beer industry by making a brand and getting someone else to make it for you and not actually put yourself out there and market it and be part of it and deal with the industry and be part of it, then you're not a beer brand. You're not even a, well, I don't know, who defines what a beer brand is, what a brewer is, whatever. So that's probably four more podcasts. But you've got to be part of it, and you've got to live it, and you've got to breathe it, and you've got to be part of it. So
I think one of the greatest things at the moment about the Australian beer industry, and especially, well, not just the Sydney or the New South Wales craft beer industry, but it is a good fact, is how approachable everyone is from a brewer's point of view, and how much access we have as consumers to people like yourself or Hendo or anyone that really know how to play, not play the game, but be involved to that degree. And
but that's as much down to the brewers themselves who make themselves available to the end consumer. It's certainly not the case for everybody in the industry. And, you know, the ones who do make themselves that approachable, who are quite open with the way that they do things, and, you know, they reap the rewards in the end.
Most definitely, yeah. And it's what we as consumers like to be able to sit and have a chat with guys like yourself and
everyone likes
pick
openness,
your brain
right?
a little bit and, yeah.
I think one of the things that defined end of last year for me was I was at Gabs, and I was standing on my distributor stand. So we had a stand which was a combined stand with Riverside, Grifter, Young Henry's.
It was like a New South Wales stand sort of a thing.
Yep, New South Wales brewer stand. And we had a beer each, and we basically, for the most part, cared and wanted to be part of there, but at the same time, yeah, with the influence of some of the Grifter and the Young Henry boys, it was like, yeah, didn't really give a fuck. And it got to the final day, and the Riverside boys, now one ex-Riverside boy, hadn't really ponied up for their due shifts. So I was like, Sunday, there you go, boys. We had fun last night. It's a bit of a mess. It's yours. Clean it up.
Off you make go. Away.
And by the way, I'm going to be down there with my distributor at the other end of the and as part of that, I was just, you know, just hanging out and just kicking back with Stu from Magic Rock and Toby from Tool and stuff like that, and just talking shit and Hendo and stuff like that. And it was just, you know, it was just
you couldn't not have a good time with that group of people, would you?
That's what it's all about. Why shouldn't the brewers have a good time as well, you know, when the rest of us are?
Well, especially in like situations like that where you rock up to a stand, the brewer doesn't want to be there. It's pretty obvious, you know. But if you see the brewers all there, like, fist fighting around and having a bit of a good time, it makes you want to hang around a little bit more as well.
Yeah, but when you've done that for 2.5 days...
You just want to shoot yourself, yeah.
Some of the others haven't been pulling their weight.
Yeah, yeah.
It does get a little bit jaded.
Yeah.
But when the same, the counter argument is in the first session, which is a bit more of a trade session, and John Mayer from Rogue is standing there, and you know who John Mayer is, right? And you're just like, oh, geez, that's John Mayer and his wife. So I was like, yeah, pour him a beer. Hey, John, how you doing? This is my beer. It's a beer called Vaccine. It's 100% wheat porter with wasabi in it. Yeah, have a taste. Tell me what you think. So he's like, yeah, it's good. His wife's like, oh, that's awesome. Like, yeah, yeah, you got a bit more of a poker face on John than have on his wife. I think it was Janet or something. I can't remember.
He was such a small dude.
But, you know, it was like, well, you know. It was just, there was a number of those moments. Then you got all the New Zealand boys there as well. Obviously, I've got a bit of a foot in both camps being a Kiwi. Knowing a number of those guys as well from when, before I became commercial, then becoming commercial, and then maintaining some of those relationships, and just keeping abreast of that. So, you know, just chatting, being able to keep up with Stu and Joss and Pete from Garage Project, and you know, Sam and Stu from Yeasty Boys, and those guys a couple of times a year, and just keeping contact, and just, yeah, I love the beer weeks.
Yeah,
it's like Schoolies Week for brewers.
It is, right. And consumers, yeah.
Schoolies Week for brewers and beer lovers, I think, is the way I put it.
Except you get to have it every year, so
yeah,
you know, it's even better than schoolies.
And you've got to plan for it, you got to prep for it, you got to be match fit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. otherwise, you'll end up on the national team.
Well, I took a fair bit of time off work last Sydney Craft Beer Week upon the assistance of my employer after my performance from the year before. So.
Nice. Yeah.
So how many more years of growth have we got left in the Sydney craft beer scene before we hit a plateau?
Ooh, when are we going to hit peak craft? Oh, that's another podcast.
When's the bubble going to burst? Is that what you're asking?
The magical bubble, yeah.
There's no bubble. I'm that
optimistic. It's going to have to plateau at some point. But
another year of growth ahead, right?
I can see more than a year.
I think a good indicator is looking at Melbourne, and I don't think they've plateaued yet. So we're a few years behind them. We can predict when we're going to plateau, when they plateau, if they plateau.
I think there's a good 3 or 4 years, at least.
For the most part, it's still regionalised.
Yeah.
A lot of the craft brewers in Australia are very, very regionalised. There's not many of the craft brewers that are national, have national distribution. So how often do you see Bacchus in Sydney, for example? Craft Beer Weeks, a few other things around there, a couple of beer dinners.
Not very often at all.
But again, the volume of what they do is targeted around their tap house and everything else. Same like...
Shenanigans or Batch or any of these New South Wales breweries.
Yep, and same from Victoria. So, you know, Two Brothers and Dayton and some of those. They're very regionalised to where they are because that's their local market. They're small, they're still getting up and running. That's what they do.
I just got some Two Brothers in at work, and people are like, oh, what's this new brewery? And like, how long has Two Brothers been around
been
for?
Around for ages.
Yeah.
Three Ravens.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So how about these like brewers? Brewers are setting up on both coasts then. So Young Henry's on the east and west coast.
Well, like Three Ravens, exact same thing.
So is that going to be a trend? Is that going to continue? Is that going
to
work?
That takes a certain level of finance to be able to do that to begin with.
What do you mean two coasts? They're about to open Adelaide.
Three coasts, all right.
Yeah,
well, they've got to be gearing up for national distribution, right?
I think they're taking advantage of the fact that I don't think we are like even near the peak at the moment, and they're they're like just cashing in on them.
Riding the wave.
There are people in regional areas and who are only now just starting to start that whole slippery slope into craft beers. And as distribution gets better and better and availability gets better and better, like, yeah. I mean, you got a craft beer bar in Albany, like, things are changing a lot.
Yeah,
so.
Sure.
Albany, WA, or Albany, New South Wales, or Victoria?
Both, New South Wales, New York. Victoria, but yeah. I haven't been to Albany and WA, so
yeah.
All right.
I guess that's it. So you can find us on Sessionable Pod on Twitter and Sessionable on Facebook, I believe.
Sure. Yes.
I am on Adrian Pua at Twitter.
On Adrian Pua?
On at Adrian Pua.
Yeah, cool.
Brad?
I'm at the Dubell.
Liam?
I'm at the Beer Lebowski.
And Doc?
At DRS Bruin on Twitter.
DRS Orders Bruin?
Yeah, that probably as well.
that one as well.
Yeah, that one. Cool. Yeah, thanks for coming along again, Doc.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doc.
Hopefully not for the last time. Really good to have you on.
And, yeah.
Thank you for the awesome beers.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
And all the best for 2015.
Pleasure.
Cheers. Thank you.
That's it. Yeah.